It's my pleasure to welcome you here to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you learning ways to save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. Coming up later, I want to talk about the fears you may have with your 401k or other retirement funds with uncertainty in the world. I want to tell you how to play that. Our websites, clark.com and clarkdeals.com. There's a question I get amazingly often that shows that people are really confused when you try to buy life insurance. There's a lot of lingo and there's a lot of choices that you'll be thrown at you. First, let me explain something to you. The people who sell life insurance, the individuals who work as life insurance agents, are really only there to pitch you life insurance policies that have some kind of add-on to them, either the equivalent of like a savings account or an investment account or something they claim that can be used for retirement or a policy they say that magically will pay for itself, blah, 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 blah. They have to try to push on you ultra-complicated life insurance policies because if they sold you just a plain vanilla straight life insurance policy, the commission they'd earn would be so low that it wouldn't even be worth the gas that they'd have to put in their vehicle to come see you to explain the life insurance to you. But on the other hand, these really, really complicated life insurance policies have gigantic commissions and very, very, very high costs for you. You can think whole life, variable life, universal variable life, indexed universal life, blah, 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 blah. When the name gets long, you know it's bad for your wallet. In life insurance, for almost all of us, except those that earn really an amount greater than $400,000 a year, which is almost nobody, the life insurance that makes sense is something known as level term insurance. All it does, and it'll be derisively referred to by commission agents, is, oh, that's just death insurance. Oh, my goodness. Why are you buying life insurance? To provide for those who are the living after you're gone, your loved ones, your family. So the purpose of life insurance is to provide replacement of income for those who are left on earth when you're gone. And nothing does that better, more efficiently, or cheaper than level term insurance. You buy an amount of insurance. The easiest back of the envelope recommendation that may or may not fit your situation is 10 times in life insurance what you earn per year. So if you earn $50,000 a year, you buy $500,000. If you earn $25,000 a year, you buy $250,000. And if you make $100,000, you buy $1,000,000. That's just absolutely, that's like playing horseshoes. It's not accurate, but for many people to get you close. So with level term, all you're doing is you're buying coverage for typically 10, 15, 20, or 30 years that pays only if you die in that 10 to 30-year period. You outlive it, it pays you nothing, pays your survivors nothing. You're not getting anything. But the beauty of it, the premiums are hyper cheap, so it won't affect your living standards at all paying the premium. And I have a simple guide at clark.com that walks you through how to buy this stuff. And again, you're not going to be buying it through a salesperson. You'll buy it over a website or over a toll-free number. And it's really simple. There are even policies now that use databases to determine if you're okay to sell this to. In other words, your health is good enough. Well, you don't even have to undergo a medical exam. And you can get a policy issued at a good premium same day. So check out what I've got. I'll walk you through how to do it and insure and protect your family. Nick is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Nick.
Hello. I'm 18. Big fan of you.
Thank you, Nick.
I'm a senior in high school right now, and I have been working the last 8 years milking cows and working on the farm day in, day out. So I got some money saved up, and I'm planning on heading to college, a senior college. But my question is, I know Roth IRAs are good fun to get in early with compound interest and everything. Should I start one of those, or should I just pay my college off in full? I'm kind of stuck in the middle.
Well, you're going to go to community college, so it will be very inexpensive, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to continue probably listening to your work ethic, because share with people that are city boys like me, how early do you have to get up to go work a part-time gig that you started at 10 years old milking cows?
Yeah. Usually we start milking about 5:30, and I'll go get done with that, go to school, and come home and start milking again and do whatever other chores are left on the farm.
All right. Well, that's a toughness that a lot of us cannot relate to. And I think all three of my kids, when they were teens, would have benefited from spending a week with you working your life instead of the life that they have.
Yeah.
So doing this work, are you getting paid at the farm in some way, or is it just something you do as a member of the family?
No, I get paid. Yeah.
Okay, great. Great. So you are free to open a Roth IRA, and you're allowed, how much will you earn in total this year?
12 grand.
12 grand. Good for you. So you can put up to $6,000 a year in a Roth IRA, and you can open one pretty easily. I want to give you the simplest Roth I can give you to open, okay?
Okay.
It would be to open one with a company called Vanguard.
Yep.
If you've listened to me, you've heard me talk about Vanguard at Vanguard.com. You're now 18, right?
Yep.
So you can, depending on your state, you probably can go ahead and open it now without an adult involved. You can go on their site, do an application for a Roth IRA, and just simply put it in the Target Retirement Fund 2065 now exists.
Okay.
And just start slapping money in it, and then that money will grow tax-free for the rest of your working years.
Yep.
And then you spend it tax-free.
So is that a smarter idea than just take a small out for college, just pay for the rest of that, or...
Well, if you're going to go to community college, it should be really inexpensive. Do you know what it'll cost you per year?
I don't know exactly, but I think all said and done, around 15, 20 grand.
For a community college?
It's not a community. It's private, but it's a private trade school.
Ah, okay. So it's a private trade school. Have you already signed a contract with them?
No.
All right. Do me a favor, please, and check the state-supported technical college that's near you. See if they offer the same program course of study. If they do, you may pay basically almost zero or close to it.
Okay.
And check that out. If you do end up going to the private technical college and you're going to face that kind of tuition, then as much as I hate to say it, reduce what you'd put in the Roth IRA. Just get started. Put in like $100 a month every month and have the rest of the money to defray the cost of tuition.
Okay.
And again, your industriousness impresses me no end. I think it's fantastic. Susan is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Clark. Thank you so much for taking my call.
It is my pleasure.
I love listening to you. I have a question on flood insurance. I'm getting ready to purchase a home that is absolutely going to require that I get flood insurance. And I thought that the only option available was government flood insurance. But the insurance carrier that I'm getting insurance from gave me the option of private flood insurance, and I didn't know how that compared to governmental insurance and if it's something I should even consider.
So private flood insurance is only a backstop if you're buying a very expensive dwelling, that okay. you need a backstop beyond the federal flood insurance program. The federal flood insurance program is subsidized by your fellow taxpayers.
Okay.
And so the first dollar loss, you want to go against the federal flood insurance program. And it's really simple to buy it. There's a website that explains everything about the federal program at floodsmart.gov. And okay. for homes that the structure itself, you know, net of land, you don't consider the land, that have a value of $250,000 or less.
Okay.
You're fully covered by the federal flood insurance policy. How much is this home you're buying likely worth?
It will be covered for like $300,000.
Okay. So you could, I mean, you have a situation, you could stack additional private flood insurance on top. In the situation where this house is that you're buying, would a flood create a total loss of the house? Is it multi-story? Like, what's this looking like?
It is a one-story house, but it is a second home at the beach.
Okay. So I'm the same situation as you, Susan.
Okay.
I have a second home at the beach, and I have a homeowner's policy. I have a windstorm policy. Those are both private.
Okay.
I have the federal flood insurance for the $250,000, and then I have private flood insurance for the excess.
Okay.
So it's right. much more gotcha. Complicated. And with the second home, I should tell you, you and I don't get the same subsidy that people do with a primary residence. And
okay.
I think that's just as it should be. I mean, why should our fellow taxpayers be subsidizing us to the hilt? When it's when it's a second home, but it is generally cheaper to have the first $250,000 under the federal program, and in your case, you'd have potentially a little supplement of a private policy.
Okay. And may I ask a follow-up question? Is there any differentiation from having a separate wind policy from the homeowners versus a combined policy, or is it just
Well, generally, what they do is it would be from the same insurer, but insurers
right.
charge you a premium separate for the windstorm, what they
okay.
usually call windstorm.
Okay. All right. That's great.
And
Thank
one
you
thing
much.
You should know, get ready for the joys of having a place on the water, which is great, but know that there will often be a larger deductible on that policy when it's a named storm.
Okay. Yes. Yep. Okay. All right. Thank you very much for the information. I really appreciate
it. Sure. And let's hope no floods, no hurricanes, nothing come near this home of yours for many, many, many years to come.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Mark's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Mark. How you doing?
I'm good. Family has been inquiring about putting a pool in. We've come to the conclusion that it's going to be a pretty expensive task to pay somebody to do it. We would save money if we did it ourselves.
No way. You could do that yourself?
I've seen some videos on YouTube. You can buy a kit and... You know, you would have to hire somebody to do the outside concrete work and probably help dig it. But, yeah, they've broken it down now where you could do it yourself.
Oh, no. You could do it yourself. I could never do it myself. The only pool we could ever have that I did myself would be if I had a young child and went and got one of those blow-up pools that they wade in when they're like a year old. That would be the limit of my ability to construct a pool.
Right. Well, my question is, if we were to want to finance, what would be your advice as to the type of financing to do for something like this? Would it be, you know, a second mortgage or a line of credit?
Yeah, it would normally be not a line of credit unless you were going to be able to pay off that loan in a relatively short period of time. How long do you think it would take you with the costs you're going to face with that pool? How many years do you think it would take you to pay it off?
Probably 2 to 3 years.
Oh, you could do it in 2 to 3. Okay, yeah. So that does make it viable and potentially preferable to do just what I said not to do, and that is if you think you could do it in, we're talking really a period of months, if you're talking about 24 to 36 months, if you can do that, you really could do a home equity line of credit and use that as a way to pay for it. So the alternative, if you had told me longer, I would have said a home equity loan, which is kind of like a second mortgage but fixed rate, that credit unions do in 5, 10, or 15-year cycles. But if you really think you can do it in 2 to 3 years and really make that happen, keep it simple and just do the HELOC and use that as the way to finance the pool. And shop around for that HELOC. Again, credit unions tend to write HELOCs at a meaningfully lower base rate and reset than banks do. And if you end up building this pool yourself, please send us pictures, because I will be more impressed than you can imagine.
It is extremely tempting, but I'm just worried of messing something up and it costs more money.
Well, it's not tempting to me at all to do a project like that. But if you want to go for it, go for it. Glad you're here with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and your wallet. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. Our websites, clark.com and clarkdeals.com. It's inevitable with investing that when the market's been doing really well or really terrible, either extreme, I get calls from people worried about what they've got, usually in an IRA, Roth, 401k, any kind of retirement plan, that they're afraid that the market is going to fall apart and that they're going to lose their money. And so we're in one of those times where the market's been great. I mean, the market bottomed in 2009 and essentially tripled by 2016 and has gone up again a meaningful amount since then. But since 2016, a lot of people have felt like we were on borrowed time, that we were kind of like the roller coaster that was going to hit the top and then it was going to be a very unfriendly decline. Well, those things happen with investing. Investing goes through cycles. But I want to talk to you about the whole idea of saying, oh, I'm pulling back here. I'm going to take my money. I'm going to put it in the safe choice in my Roth or 401k or whatever. Often in a retirement plan at work, it'll be called like a stable value fund or something, basically like putting your money in a CD type thing. Okay, so do you know that if you are a meaningful number of years from retirement, pretty much anybody in their 40s or younger, even if the market fell off a cliff next week and stayed ugly for, let's say, a couple of years, even longer, it would have no long-term effect on how you did and might actually make you more money if you just kept doing what you're doing, putting money in each pay period time after time and leaving your money well diversified. The easiest answer for most of us is a target retirement fund for the year closest when you're going to retire. Because remember what happens when the market goes in the toilet. If you keep contributing, every paycheck that you put money into your 401k or Roth or IRA, every time you do it, you're buying more shares for the same money. So then when the market eventually recovers, it boomerangs to give you much more money than you would have had if the market was just steady eddy. So declines are your friend the younger you are. So what happens if you're right up against retirement? Well, your portfolio naturally should be more conservative. And what made me want to talk about this is I took a call from somebody who was 2 years from retirement, who was 100% in stocks in their retirement account. Too much risk. You dial back the risk. You don't stop putting money in the market, because if you retire in your 60s, you may well live another 30 or so years. You got to worry about 30 years from now. I mean, think about your 60, let's say you're 63 years old. You dial back 30 years, 33. You're a completely different person, different place in life at 33 than you are at 63. Imagine you live another 30 years, just the opposite of that, to 93. A lot's going to happen in your life you got to prepare for. So just because you're older doesn't mean you bag investing. Investing meaning you're putting your money at risk. But the amount of risk you place, the percent of your money in stock type choices, reduces over time. Just look at the target retirement fund choices you have and see how, depending on the year you put in, how the money less and less is in stock choices. Even if you choose to do your own funds outside of a target retirement fund, you can see kind of mimicking what they're up to based on the age you are. You can set up a portfolio that reduces the risk but doesn't take away the chance for meaningful reward over time. Thomas is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Thomas.
Hi, Clark. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you, Thomas. How can I serve you?
Just had a question. Came across a real estate investing site on the computer the other day, and I was just wondering if it might be something good to invest in.
So what exactly do they do?
It's like an investing site. They deal with apartments, commercial property, new apartment developers, and they have like a $500 minimum package that you can get involved in. And from the reviews I've seen online, they all seem to be pretty good, and I just wanted to get your take on it.
So you would own little parts of individual properties, and they would then pay you supposedly whatever profits there are, they're paying you over time?
Right.
Okay. And how much do you have to pay to be involved in this?
Well, for the minimum one that they have, I see it's like $500 to get started.
No, but how much in fees do they charge you?
No, I didn't see that part of it.
Ah, okay. So this is a hot thing on the internet right now with these organizations putting together little real estate investment firms where they go out and use your money to buy individual houses, buy a small apartment complex, to invest in a little office building, whatever. And you're just putting money in, and they charge you fees to get involved. Usually it would be common that you pay 2 to 5% of your money up front for going into it, and then ongoing expenses each year that tend to be another 1 to 2%.
Right.
But the fees they're charging you are on top of them handling the books. They're the ones that decide if the particular buildings that they're running, that they're making money or not. And remember, since they're controlling the books, you have no way of knowing if they're putting expenses in there that really shouldn't be in there. So they're not reporting big profits, so there's not a lot of money for you.
Right.
So I don't like these private kind of placements that you can put your money in. If you're interested in being involved in real estate and not actually having to manage any property, there's a really easy, simple way for you to do it, and that's to go into a real estate mutual fund.
Okay.
And the cheapest of all of them out there are from a company you may have heard me tell you I love, and that's Vanguard.
Right.
Do you do any stuff with Vanguard?
I don't, but I've definitely heard of them.
So if you go into one with Vanguard or Schwab or Fidelity or whatever, it'll be ultra low cost. You won't have upfront fees you have to pay. And they're managing it. They're managing the investment, only investing in organizations that they have reason to believe are doing everything as they should. So it's a much safer path for you to get involved in investing in real estate than in a private kind of offer like this, where you have really no say-so or oversight with how they set the budget and what part is for you. Young Hing is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you, Clark?
Great, thank you. You want to talk about Fidelity Investments, huh?
Yes, I'm trying to learn more about the investing. And now the ETF seem like it's very popular. Fidelity, they offer some no fee, no transaction ETF. And they also have some zero management and that kind of thing. I wonder what your take will be. Would that be a good way to try to learn how to invest without a kind of cost a lot for the trading fee?
All right. So with the offering from Fidelity, with the zero funds, they're mutual funds. They're not ETFs. And they're right at the heart of where I like all investors to start, which is a concept that first was coined by Charles Schwab, the guy who has that big investment company. But he popularized the idea of something known as core and explore, that you start off your investing wide. So like what Fidelity's done with their zero cost index funds, which one of them is total U.S. stock market, owns thousands of U.S. publicly traded companies. And then the zero cost international index fund, which again owns thousands of shares, you know, different individual foreign stocks, is with those two things, you own investing here and in much of the rest of the world at no commission and at no ongoing management costs. And the reason Fidelity's doing it is they're trying to attract people like you that are starting out with investing and making it zero cost for you to do so. And you start off completely widely diversified, which, you know, over time, I'm just totally into you being diversified two ways. One is having your money really spread out. And the second is that you add to the money over time, which allows you to do something known as dollar cost averaging, which lowers the risk of investing, particularly in the shorter term. Like when the stock market bust happened last decade, I kept investing every month in my wide bank of funds. I did it every single month, even as the market was going down, because every time I was putting money in, I was buying more holdings because the price was going down. The same money was buying me more of it. And as what eventually happened, the market recovered, and I ended up with a very nice return by just having the guts to stay in and keep putting money in. So the Fidelity Zero Funds, the international and domestic, that gives you that initial exposure. There's no minimums. You can just get started with whatever money, add to it as you wish. And then if you want to go wider with investing and do different things and own different kinds of funds to add to that, or individual stocks, go for it.
So you would recommend those vehicles?
Well, I like them. I mean, they're not all I like. Like if you're doing a Roth IRA, I love for it to be even simpler and just do a target retirement fund with a Roth for the year closest to when you hope to retire.
Right. Do they have a commitment if those zero fund, you kind of give them a favor pinning? And if I invested, just like you said, if the stock is not, market is crashed, not doing well, can people kind of cash out, be sidelined for a while?
Oh, sure. You can cash out if you want. In a regular investment account, you might have tax due if you made money while you were in it. But the idea is you can buy and sell funds when you wish. But these are the kind of things that you want to be in through your lifetime.
Oh, okay. It's long term.
Long term. And I'm totally into long term. I know there are people that are in, get in now, get out now, all that. That's not me. I want you to stay in the game. I want you to have a plan. I want you to have it spread out, diversified, and that you stay in it and march to it by adding money to it on a set schedule all through your lifetime and build wealth. But remember, the highest priority is always saving money in retirement accounts first as the first goal you do. Joshua joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Joshua.
Hey, Clark.
Joshua, you got a preschooler there. Tell me about it.
Yeah. She just started first grade, actually. Or kindergarten, I'm sorry.
Really? Wow, time flies. What's her name, Joshua?
Her name is Aislinn.
So how can I help with Aislinn?
We've been putting back a savings in just a savings account under my bank account pretty much since she was born. Just kind of contributed, you know, $5 or $10 a week or so to it. It's gotten a little over $1,000 or so in there. I would like to put it somewhere where it can do a little bit more good than what it's doing now.
All right. Well, how bright does she seem to be?
She's very, very smart.
So she's headed to MIT, Harvard, Stanford, Caltech.
Could be.
How likely is college in her future and your family culture?
I don't lean towards college. I like the trades a little better personally. But if she does happen to want to go to college, you know, I do want her to have the opportunity to go.
All right. Do you know why I asked that question?
Based on, I guess, the type of account because
there's these great accounts available for kids where you can put money aside for college and it grows tax-free and it's spent tax-free. But if the kid doesn't go to college, you get eaten up with penalties and taxes. So that's why I always ask that question. So if college is, what sometimes people say, you bet she's going to college. She doesn't have a choice in the matter. And then other people will say, well, you know, whatever works best for her, for a trade or whatever. And that would mean not doing a college plan. So what is the purpose of this money for Aislinn long term?
I don't know if I want her to be able to use it when she turns 18 or 21, or if it would just kind of be more towards like maybe an early type of retirement for her, something of that nature.
All right. So,
either or.
So right now, this is in a savings account, and your purpose and intention for it is to be for her benefit.
Right.
All right. I'm going to tell you the craziest suggestion. You ever heard of a Roth IRA?
Yes, I have.
So I would put the money, I would empty the savings account, put it into a Roth IRA, and all the money that you ever intend to be for her benefit goes in that Roth. That way it grows tax-free. You can give her the contributions of this money you put in it tax-free, penalty-free, when she reaches 18 or 21. But you own the account. You control it. Whatever earnings it has over the next couple of decades, that stays in there for you for your retirement way down the road. And the contributions can go to her, but whatever earnings stay there for you. The beauty of it is you keep control. It grows tax-free. You give her the money tax-free, and it's the best possible thing I can recommend. Go to Clark.com, look at my investment guide to set up a Roth. It'll be really easy. You own it, and then you and I both know the contributions are what are going to go to her tax-free. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.